We're told that on February 21st, 1829, a prominent notice in the leading musical journal of Berlin invited readers to an important and happy event, a performance of The Passion According to St. Matthew by Johann Sebastian Bach, under the direction of Herr Felix Mendelssohn Bartholdy. And the Berliners answered the call. On March 11th, 1829, the date of the first performance, the hall of the Berlin Singakademie was filled. Close to 1,000 people were turned away. Many prominent Berliners came, from the king and court to the philosophers Hegel and Schleiermacher. The great writer Goethe could not make it from Weimar, but he was very aware of the importance of the event. All this we learn from Celia Applegate's account in the study Bach in Berlin. And years later, as Zelter, a friend of his mature years, recounted the young Mendelssohn's revival of the St. Matthew Passion to Goethe, it seemed to the writer Goethe as if he could hear the ocean's roar from afar. Martin Geck writes in an essay titled In the Thick of the Real World's Turmoil that a significant aspect of this great music is its treatment of the process of grieving, pain, unrest, cruelty, betrayal, and mortality are all presented for what they are. They are not simply eradicable blemishes, but fundamental tendencies that exist in the world because the world exists. And he asks further, what is it that ensures the overall impression of unity without which we could not justifiably speak of the St. Matthew Passion as a work at all? It is, for Geck, firstly, its pure size that fixates, concentrates, and relates our feelings, as only the actual experience of suffering and death can otherwise do. Furthermore, it is the purpose of all music of magnitude not to lose itself in the pedantic representation of small details, but to create large arcs of tension, and so to present a complete whole. It is moreover a characteristic of the age of Bach to present the supporting of the music as an endless basso continuo chain, and so make it virtually impossible for us, the listeners, to disengage ourselves from the music. That from Martin Geck in his notes for this recording of the St. Matthew Passion by Johann Sebastian Bach. And as we can understand then, the St. Matthew Passion is a monumental work and a massive undertaking to present. Thanks to a special grant from the Wilkes University Research and Scholarship Fund, the centerpiece of the 33rd annual Northeastern Pennsylvania Bach Festival, hosted by the Arcadia Chorale the weekend of March 17th and 18th, will be a performance of the Bach St. Matthew Passion at St. Stephen's Episcopal Church in Wilkes-Barre. Dr. Stephen Thomas is music director and conductor of the Arcadia Chorale and director of choral activities and professor of music at Wilkes University. He stopped in at the WVIA studios to talk with us about this year's festival and the way the tradition began.
This year is Bach's 333rd birthday, and so it got started in celebration of the 300th, sort of inspired by that event. So it's been around for quite a while now.
This is a big one for you.
It is. The big event is the last, the third of the three concerts, but the first two are wonderful concerts in their own right as well. Those that are not familiar with the Northeast Pennsylvania Bach Festival, there's three concerts over 2 days, March 17th and March 18th this year. Saturday, we have two concerts in the afternoon. We have an organ concert, and then we have a chamber music concert that evening. And then the second day in the afternoon on Sunday, the 18th, is the choral concert. So that's our structure that we've been going with for a number of years now. This year, the first concert, the organ concert, Every year we feature a guest artist, and this year we have Stephen Williams. We're welcoming him back to the festival. He actually played on the festival back in 2012, so it's been 6 years. It's time to bring him back. Mr. Williams is the Director of Music Ministries and Organist at Cathedral Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem. He's a wonderful, wonderful organist, wonderful musician, and he has picked a great program for the festival. It features a mix of works both by and inspired by Bach, which is very typical of this concert. Usually there is at least some works by Bach and then other works sort of that have some kind of connection, either they're similar time period or they have some other kind of connection to Bach. This year, there's no contemporaries, but there are, you know, a number of works by Bach and then things that came later that have a connection. So the later pieces, there's two works that use Bach's name as thematic material. Now, this is something as part of a long tradition. The name Bach, you can take the letters B-A-C-H, and in the German system of naming notes, all of those refer to notes. So B is what we would call B flat. A is A, C is C, and H is what we would call B natural. And so that, if you put those together, they make a little melody, a little four-note melody. And the idea of using that as a melody actually starts with Bach. So he does that on his own in some of his own pieces. But then after that, it became a way of paying tribute to him, to take that as a jumping-off point and you know, use that theme as a basis for other compositions. And so on the program are two examples of that tradition, one by Robert Schumann, so he's a 19th century composer, and then a 20th century composer, Miloš Sokola, which is a new name to me, so I'm excited to hear this piece. So then he's also, in addition to those pieces, he's doing an arrangement for organ of the famous Chaconne in D minor from the Violin Partita No. 2. We've actually had the Chaconne played on our chamber concert in the past, but to my knowledge, we haven't had it done as an organ piece on the organ concert. So I'm looking forward to hearing that. Also on the program are two chorale settings, including a setting of the chorale O Mensch Bewein, which that melody figures prominently in one of the movements of the piece that's on the Sunday concert, the St. Matthew Passion. So that's a nice connection that our organist was able to make with the rest of the festival. Then there's also four duets from Bach's Klavierübung and a five-voice fugue that's the final piece of the Klavierübung and also the final piece of the concert. So it should be a really terrific concert, and I am looking forward to hearing him again.
Remind us where we'll be with that.
Well, that's actually important information because this year, the Bach Festival, so we've been around for 33 years. Years 1 through 32 were in Scranton. Year 33 is actually in Wilkes-Barre. The reason that the Bach Festival is in Wilkes-Barre this year is because the third concert, the concert of featuring the St. Matthew Passion, it's a collaboration with Wilkes University, and it's actually supported by a grant from Wilkes University. And so we're making it convenient to the Wilkes community. It's going to be just down the street from the Wilkes campus. And so that's a change for us, a change for our audience. We'll have to travel from, you know, if they live near Scranton, they'll have to come to Wilkes-Barre. But for the people who are in the Wilkes-Barre area who've been going to Scranton for the last 32 years, they'll be happy that they have a shorter drive this year. We will be back in Scranton next year. This is not a permanent change or anything. It's just a special thing for this year's festival. So the chamber concert, as we do every year, we feature members of our orchestra, our Arcadia Festival Orchestra. And this year, like most years, we have a variety of different kinds of ensembles. We have a string quartet, we have two trios, and a solo concerto with the orchestra. And in recent years, we've been playing with the boundaries of what a Bach festival can contain. Last year, we had Mozart and Fauré, which are fairly far away from Bach. And this year, actually, three of the works are from the Baroque period. But the concert opener is different. That is not a Baroque piece. It's actually a piece by Brahms. It's his quartet in A minor, Opus 51, number 2. And it's interesting, Brahms took a very long time to write a string quartet. He famously took a very long time to write his first symphony. He didn't take quite so long to write the string quartet, but he wrote, I think, more than a dozen of them, and none of them were worthy. He didn't want to publish any of them, so he got rid of them. We don't have them. He destroyed them. They're gone. Finally, he came up with a pair that he thought were worth publishing. That was his Opus 51, and this is the second of that pair. Our quartet consists of Sophie Till, who's the concertmaster of one of our orchestras on the concert on the next day, John Vida, who is the concertmaster of the other orchestra on the concert on Sunday, both of them on violin, Amy Iwazumi on viola, and Christiana Oppenheimer-Vida on cello. So that's the quartet. So that's the Brahms quartet. And then the Baroque composers, Georg Philipp Telemann, Antonio Vivaldi, and of course, J.S. Bach. Tom Heintz, who's the artistic director for our chamber concert, has done a series of arrangements of Bach trio sonatas, originally composed for the organ. He arranges them for instruments. And this year, we're actually featuring one of those. It's a trio sonata in G major, BWV 530. It features Tom on oboe, Harold Levine on viola, and Gail Klaber on cello. And then the work by Telemann is another trio, although it was originally written for instruments, not for organ. And the Telemann work features Ed Wargo on flute, Martha McAdams on viola, and Tsukasa Waltich on harpsichord. These are all wonderful, wonderful musicians, longstanding members of our orchestra, and of course, musicians in the area, and fabulous players, and it's a joy to get to work with them and to hear them play. The concert ends, then, with a concerto by Antonio Vivaldi. Now, we've had concertos on the Bach Festival before. We've had Vivaldi concertos on the chamber concert before, but this is a Vivaldi mandolin concerto, and that's a first for us. It just so happens that we have an accomplished mandolin player who's a regular member of our orchestra. That's Jeffrey Ellenberger, who normally plays violin for us, but also a terrific mandolin player and the conductor of the New York Mandolin Orchestra. So that is, I think, going to be a really wonderful way to end that concert. It's a nice mix. We have the three Baroque pieces and then, of course, the Brahms string quartet. Then the third event of the festival is, of course, the choral concert. This year, it's a special thing. We're doing the Bach St. Matthew Passion. This piece is arguably Bach's masterpiece. It's deeply moving. It's a dramatic telling of the Passion story, and it contains some of Bach's most beautiful music. He actually did several Passions. There are two that exist, the St. John Passion and the St. Matthew Passion. Those are the two that are preserved that we still have the music for. The chorale did the St. John Passion a number of years ago, and the chorale has done the piece in the past, but not since I took over. So this is my first chance to do this piece. I've sung it twice, and actually it has a lot to do with my decision to go into this profession. And it's a little bit of a personal story that my freshman year in college, I sang the St. Matthew Passion, and it was a landmark event for me. I mean, really a wonderful, wonderful performance. I was very taken with the piece, but also with this whole, I mean, I'd been singing all my life, but never had a chance to do anything quite like this before. And it made me think, oh, wow, there's something here. Maybe I should, you know, think about this. And that, you know, I mean, I didn't on the spot decide I had to, you know, someday conduct it. But it was certainly was it made a big impression on me and led in no small part to me becoming a music major and then eventually deciding that I wanted to be a conductor. And so I sang it my first year in college, and then I sang it again in graduate school and have never conducted it. So it's, you know, it's been on that list. And I've waited because it's quite an undertaking and I wanted to be ready for it. And it's the time is now. And so I'm excited and all the singers are excited to take this piece on. One of the reasons why it's not done that often. And it's one of the reasons for that is because it's such a massive undertaking. It's written for three choirs, two orchestras, many vocal soloists. And I think maybe I'll talk a little bit about how the piece works, and then I'll get into a couple of other details, I think, as we go. I mentioned the soloists. One of those soloists is called the Evangelist, and he sings a lot of the biblical text. So, of course, the Passion, it's called the St. Matthew Passion because it's taking the story of the Passion from the Gospel of Matthew. So the Evangelist, a tenor, sings a lot of this text that comes from the Gospel of Matthew. But when individual characters in this story speak, soloists sing their words. So Jesus especially, he says a lot in this story. So that's the major role, the two major roles really, along, you know, there's the Evangelist and then Jesus are the two sort of primary soloists. But there's also characters of Peter, Judas, Pilate, and a number of other characters as well. And whenever those characters speak in the story, a soloist sings those words. When groups speak, the choir sings their word, or the choirs sing their words. There's a number of different groups in the story. There's disciples, there's the priests, the scribes, the elders, the soldiers, there's a bloodthirsty mob. I mean, there's all kinds of different, and it's a great challenge, I think, for the singers. They have to play a lot of different characters. And they're not, I mean, sometimes they're angry, but sometimes they're, you know, they have a wide variety, wide range of emotions that they have to communicate. And that's actually only part of what the choirs do. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute. And speaking of choirs, there's three. The Arcadia Chorale, of course, is one of them. Wilkes University Chorus is another of them. And there's also a children's choir that sings. That's the Contrary Choir of the Choral Society of Northeast Pennsylvania. That's directed by Leslie Mason Moran. The children's choir sings on two movements, the opening and closing movements of the first half. And the other two choirs sing throughout. And the children's choir sort of has a special role to play. I'll talk about that a little bit more in a minute. So we have these two choirs plus the children's choir. Then we also have two orchestras, because when each choir sings, they have their own orchestra that plays with them. And then we have all the soloists. The soloists are actually assigned to a choir. So when, you know, the soprano one sings, the orchestra one plays with her. When the soprano two sings, you know, orchestra two plays with her. So you get this very interesting dialogue that goes on between these groups. So the choruses, I mentioned before that they don't just portray these crowds. That is a large part of what they do, but they also get to react to the story on behalf of the listeners. And they also help frame the action. So they sing on the opening and closing movements of each half. So two parts, opening and closing movement on each part, and in between there's a lot of action that happens and a lot of reaction that happens. So I want to talk a little bit about the first movement, because I think that kind of helps understand a little bit the amazing brilliance of Bach, but sort of how this piece works a little bit. So it opens with a lament that sets the tone of the piece. And you have these two choirs, choir one, choir two. Choir one is labeled the Daughters of Zion, which means essentially it's a reference to the Bride of Christ, or the Church is sort of what they represent. And then you have choir two, which is labeled the Faithful, Die Gläubigen, and that represents the congregation. So you have the Church sort of as an institution and then the congregation. And choir one begins the lament. They call for all the Daughters of Zion to join in their lament about this story of the suffering and death of Jesus. So they do this for a while, and then the dialogue starts. So choir one, the Daughters of Zion, addresses choir two, the Faithful, which then interjects questions which are answered by choir one. So, for instance, choir one says, "Behold." Choir two says, "Who?" Choir one says, "The bridegroom." Now, bridegroom, referring to Jesus. "Behold him." "How?" "Like a lamb." Okay, they have this back and forth sort of dialogue discussion. And suddenly, as choir one sings, "Like a lamb," "als wie ein Lamm," a third choir, the children's choir, joins in singing different music, but related. The chorale melody, "O Lamb Gottes," "O Lamb of God." So just the choir one sings the word lamb, and the children's chorus sort of keys on that, takes that and connects in with this chorale melody that is very closely related to what's going on here. The lament is in E minor. The hymn tune is in G major. And it's sort of like the children are bringing this ray of hope into this lament that, you know, sort of a reminder to the congregation, to the audience, that while the Passion itself ends with the death of Jesus, Easter is coming. And there's something that the audience won't get because it's a visual thing, but in Bach's original handwritten score, the theological importance of what the children are singing is reinforced visually. So you have, at the top of the page, you have choir one and orchestra one. At the bottom of the page, you have choir two and orchestra two. And in the middle, in the center of all this stuff, you have this melody that the children are singing. Choir one is in black ink, choir two is in black ink, children are in red. So it's this very striking visual image of just the central importance of what they're singing. And what they're singing is, it's O Lamb Gottes, O Lamb of God. It's essentially a German version of the Agnus Dei. O Lamb of God, who takes away the sin of the world, have mercy on us. And that right there, that one line, that essentially is the Passion in a nutshell, and the approach that Bach takes to the Passion. So it's this, it really sets up this piece brilliantly. It's incredibly beautiful and moving, and just so, I mean, complex in a way, but just, it just works so well. It's just, anyway, it's Bach at his best, and it's just wonderful music. So the chorale that the children's choir sing in that first one, it's only the first of many chorales in the Passion. So the chorales are, for people that don't know what those are German hymn tunes. They're essentially just hymns that are part of the German Lutheran tradition, and they're called German chorales. So these chorales are one of the ways that the choirs get to react to the action. The Passion is famous, the St. Matthew Passion is famous not just for its beauty and its drama, but also for its structure and its cohesion. And I want to give one example of how Bach uses a chorale to create unity and also a dramatic progression. So one example of a chorale, and in fact it's a chorale that recurs in the piece, and there are several chorales that happen multiple times, but this is the one that happens the most. O Haupt voll Blut und Wunden, O Sacred Head Surrounded, some people know it that way, or Sacred Head Now Wounded. This is known as the Passion Chorale, and it happens five times. First time, the key signature is four sharps. Second time, key signature, three flats. Then two sharps, one flat. And the last time, no key signature. So this is a representation in a way of this, sort of this inevitable progression toward the crucifixion. And the last one happens right after Jesus dies. And this is something that listeners wouldn't necessarily notice. I mean, they'd recognize the tune coming back, but they might not know the key signature thing. But for the performers, it gives a hint of the unifying structure that binds this piece together, and it makes that arrival of the final chorale that much more poignant. And it's just, that's just one example. I mean, there's so much in this piece. There's a reason why, I mean, some conductors just do this over and over and over again, just because there's so much in it. I'm not thinking yet about the next time. I'm mostly focused on this time. But you know, it's one of those pieces. You can just keep coming back, and there's always more to discover about it. So the chorus gets to react and provide commentary and so on to what's happening in the story. But the soloists, the solo singers, get to do that as well. And there are soprano, alto, tenor, and bass soloists, multiples. And so we have a lot of solo. There's a lot of solo movements, a lot of solo singers. And they're all wonderful, but I want to give one example in particular of a particularly famous one. It's Erbarme dich, mein Gott. Have mercy, my God, for the sake of my tears. This English translation of part of the text. And it's one of the most beautiful arias ever written. It's just an amazing piece. It's for solo violin and solo alto. And it just perfectly captures the plea for mercy, the sorrow and the beauty of the Passion, and it's just amazing, and it's worth hearing for that movement by itself, or many movements I could draw out. It's some of Bach's most amazing music, and it's quite a piece. It's an emotionally draining, epic journey is one way to think about it, both for the performers and for the audience, from that opening lament through Jesus' betrayal, his suffering and death, to the final tragic lullaby, and it contains some of Bach's most thrilling, heartbreaking, and utterly sublime music. I want to talk a little bit about some of our guest artists. I mentioned we have a lot of soloists. Singing the role of the evangelist, we have Gene Stenger, who specializes in Baroque music, and in particularly in this role, and you have to. I mean, this role for the evangelist, evangelist in St. John Passion, they're very demanding roles, and people make their careers on this kind of thing. So singing roles like this, singing Baroque opera, it's a thing. It's you know, there's performers that specialize in this, and he is one of those. He's in demand as a performer of this repertoire, and he studied at and teaches at Yale University, which is partly how I found him. So we're very excited to get a chance to work with him. The role of Jesus is being sung by Timothy Lefevre, who sang the role of Jesus when we did St. John Passion back in 2009. He was just tremendous then, and I'm very excited to get a chance to bring him back and work with him again. He teaches now at Oberlin Conservatory. Those are sort of our two headliners doing the two major roles, and they're both just wonderful, wonderful performers. So they will be terrific. We have a number of other vocal soloists, some from the chorale, some guests. Jessica Hitchcock, Martina Barna, Ellen Rutkowski, Kathy Brink, Vale Rideout, and George Lewandowski are people who are singing featured solos in the performance. And they're all wonderful. I don't have time to talk about all of them individually, but they're all wonderful, wonderful singers. And so it's great to get a chance to showcase them. And of course, one thing about this is that we have, as I mentioned, a double orchestra. We have our standing orchestra that's usually the same people that plays, but we had to hire another one. So we have a number of guest or new members of the orchestra that will be joining us for the first time. So it's exciting for me to get to know some people and get to work with larger forces and larger group and get to know some of these fine musicians in our region.
You mentioned, and we can understand, having heard you lay it out like this for us, Stephen, that this is a monumental undertaking. Why is it and how is it that Wilkes has seen fit to make this possible?
Well, several years ago, the university established what they call the Research and Scholarship Fund, which exists to support faculty scholarship, faculty research, creative endeavors, certainly to support faculty research and scholarship activities, but then also hopefully to involve students in that in a way that's appropriate. And so this is obviously a way to do that. It's a way for me to do a major event that requires a lot of resources above and beyond what we normally do. Our Bach festivals are you know, wonderful things normally, and then this is something on top of that. And it's a significant undertaking that requires some additional resources. And so I applied for and was lucky enough to receive the support from Wilkes to do this. And then, of course, my students get a chance to be part of this and to really, they are choir two, Arcadia Chorale is choir one. And so they have to go toe-to-toe with the Arcadia Chorale and really hold their own, and they will. I mean, they've been doing a great job. I mean, the Arcadia Chorale is doing a great job. Of course they do, they always do, right? And my students do too, but this is a chance for them to show off all the hard work that they've been doing on the Bach Festival, which is something that they don't get a chance to do all that often. So it's nice to give them that opportunity. And, you know, for the students, you know, this may be the only chance they ever have to sing this piece. And I want to give that opportunity to them like I had when I was a student in college. It's a chance for them to have that experience. And you know, hopefully it'll be a formative experience for them the way that it was for me.
Was there something this time through, now that you're coming to digest it so that you can conduct the piece, that just hit you and said, I knew he was brilliant and I know so many things, but was there one of many things that came to you and you said, wow?
It's funny, I'm not sure I have a single thing. I think approaching it as a conductor versus approaching it as a singer is very different in a way, because when you're singing, especially singing in the chorus, you know your part really well. But as part of that process, you may not see the whole, because you are only one. I mean, you're a very important character, but you're only, well, actually you're a couple of characters, but still the piece as a whole is bigger than any one of the performers that are in it. And so I think for me, just seeing the whole in a different way has been just, it's mind-boggling, you know, that this could come out of one guy's mind and just have such coherence and such beauty. It is funny though. One thing that did occur to me, that there's a pedagogical aspect to this, I think, that never really occurred to me before. And that's maybe one thing that I'm partly musically, but especially I think theologically, because I mean, it's, of course, this was written for a church service. Now we're not doing it that way. And it's interesting to think about that, because the piece is quite long. And in the middle of it, there would have been an hour-long sermon between the two parts. And then, you know, other church that has to happen too, besides just this piece. So it would have been a very, that's what you were doing that day if you were in box time, if you were going to go to church on this day, on Good Friday, which is when it would have been done. We don't quite take the same tack to that. But thinking about it in that context, and thinking about Bach wrote a number of the things that he wrote, a number of collections that he wrote, had a pedagogical aspect to it. And I'm seeing that same person in this piece, sort of instructing some of the students that were in his care in certain ways, musically, but like I said, also theologically. There's a lot of theological points that are, I think, for the congregation's benefit, but I think also for the students' benefit. And of course, I look at it that way now because I have students that are part of this. I mean, I'm not doing theological instruction with my students, but But there is that learning experience, I think, that it resonates with me because, I mean, I'm learning a lot, but my students, of course, and of course, Arcadia Crowell is learning a lot too, because that's one of the joys of approaching a piece like this, that there's always something to learn.
Dr. Stephen Thomas, music director and conductor of the Arcadia Chorale and director of choral activities and professor of music at Wilkes University in Wilkes-Barre, speaking with us about the 33rd annual Northeastern Pennsylvania Bach Festival to be held Saturday and Sunday, March 17th and 18th in Wilkes-Barre in celebration of the music of Bach. The festival begins on Saturday afternoon with an organ concert, continues with a chamber music concert Saturday evening, and culminates in a performance of the Bach St. Matthew Passion on Sunday afternoon. Saturday, March 17th at 4, an organ concert at the First Presbyterian Church, South Franklin Street in Wilkes-Barre, given by Stephen Williams, who is Director of Music Ministries and organist at the Cathedral Church of the Nativity in Bethlehem. Admission to the organ concert is free. Saturday, March 17th at 7:30 in the evening, just up the block at St. Stephen's Episcopal Church, 35 South Franklin Street in downtown Wilkes-Barre, members of the Arcadia Festival Orchestra will perform a program of chamber music, pieces by Bach, Vivaldi, Telemann, and a string quartet by Johannes Brahms. The Bach Festival will conclude with a performance of the Bach St. Matthew Passion, Sunday, March 18th at 3 in the afternoon at St. Stephen's Episcopal Church, South Franklin Street in Wilkes-Barre, featuring the Arcadia Chorale, the Wilkes University Chorus, the Cantori Choir of the Choral Society of Northeastern Pennsylvania, the Arcadia Festival Orchestra, and many guest vocal soloists. For more information on the web, arcadiachorale.org, arcadiachorale.org. That's the 33rd annual Northeastern Pennsylvania Bach Festival, Saturday and Sunday, March 17th and 18th, in downtown Wilkes-Barre. The organ concert at 4 on Saturday afternoon at the First Presbyterian Church, South Franklin Street in Wilkes-Barre, with organist Stephen Williams. That evening, Saturday, March 17th at 7:30 at St. Stephen's Episcopal Church on South Franklin Street, the chamber performance with Bach, Vivaldi, Telemann, and Brahms, and then the Bach St. Matthew Passion on Sunday, March 18th at 3 in the afternoon at St. Stephen's Episcopal Church in Wilkes-Barre. For more information on the web, arcadiachorale.org, arcadiachorale.org.